It's a How to Shoot Hybrid podcast discussing topics around photography, videography, and running a business. My name's Jules, and I'm here with Kieran.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us, everybody.
You couldn't sound less enthusiastic there, Jules. He's back again.
Have you got some kind of dolly on your camera there, mate? It like seemed to turn like on its own.
Yeah, watch this. You ready?
Yep. Oh,
I've got one of them arms on it. it's normally hidden in the corner and I never use it. But
right, but today you
pull it out once in a while for you.
Yeah, you're giving us a show.
That doesn't sound right, does it?
No, it doesn't. People are going to need to watch the YouTube video just
tune
to make
in.
Sure that it's not dodgy.
Yeah.
So, we thought this week we'd talk about things that inspire us or where we get our inspiration from for our creativity and our business. We didn't actually talk about how we were going to play this, mate, but I thought it would be basically an open forum, really, to talk about the past inspiration when you were younger, growing up, and then kind of all the way through to getting involved in your business. And then, you know, now you've got quite a lot of experience. How has that changed? Does your inspiration come from elsewhere? And just see where it takes us, really.
Yeah, sounds good. I don't even know where to begin with inspiration when I was a kid. Bloody hell. Spider-Man?
Well, that's where I was going to go with it, you know.
To be fair, mine's really cliche and quite boring. I think an inspiration for me when I was a kid would have been my granddad.
Yeah, well,
there we go. We'll start with that one then.
Okay.
So when I was a kid, my inspiration was my granddad because he was just a family guy. He was always there for us. And yeah, he just helped us out whenever we needed it. And as much as sometimes at school, I used to get into trouble being a little bit of a cheeky chap, like my granddad kind of just always reassured me that, yeah, a little bit now and again. Yeah, he always just reassured me that things were all right, really. So yeah, I won't go into too much detail about what I got up to, but yeah. Yeah, he was a good inspiration.
Yeah.
He was a good chap. Not here anymore, unfortunately, but yeah, he was a good fella. What about you when you were a kid? Who was your inspiration?
Well, yeah, I guess various family members. I mean, my granddad would be an interesting one because I think there was inspiration there from things, but also I probably you know, without turning it into a therapy session, I probably ended up with some hang-ups, you know, certain family members. My granddad was so like quite a kind of long-winded story if I tell the whole thing, but like I had a really strange childhood. My parents divorced when I was 2 years old. And I lived with my mum. My mum didn't have any money at all. So we were very kind of like poor when I was growing up. And I didn't see my dad for a year or two. And then he came back into my life and I sort of spent, you know, the typical day a week or, you know, one evening a week or whatever with my dad as I got a little bit older. But the backstory to all of this is my uncle, he was a musician and he was quite a famous musician at the time, and he had a band and he was basically touring around the world, you know, like proper, not at the level of like, you know, Rolling Stones and Queen and stuff like that, but this is back in the 70s, but it was like, you know, the rung below that. So, you know, on TV, on Top of the Pops, selling out big concerts and things.
What were they called? Do you know?
But, his band was called Bebop Deluxe. If you look
Deluxe,
it up, I mean, but so you would think that I would grow up in this, potentially in this almost, you know, like wealthy environment. And my dad was also a musician. He was a saxophone and player and keyboard. He played all sorts of instruments. But basically, my dad was a musician. He played in one of my uncle's bands. He later went on to be in a different band, And my dad kind of had some semi-success, not like on the same level as my uncle, but my dad did, you know, he did get a record deal, you know. So there was the parts before my mum and dad split up when I was either before I was born or just after I was born. You know, we kind of lived this weird lifestyle where there was like the record deal advance came through. There was loads of money and then it got spent and then there was nothing. And then like my dad was taking, you know, like just any job he could just to put food on the table. Yeah. And then he'd bugger off on tour for months, leaving my mum on her own with me. And then he'd come back and, you know, it wasn't a great situation. So, but I kind of had all this, I had all these creatives in my life, if you like, growing up. My dad was a musician. My uncle's a musician. My mum was an opera singer, although she didn't do that till later on, wow. But she kind of, yeah. So they're all really musical. My grandma taught music at her school. So she was a really good piano player.
Can you play any instrument then?
So they all wanted me to, so they gave me piano lessons and violin lessons and all that shit, but I hated it. I couldn't get on board because they wanted me to play, you know, kind of classical music. And at the time I just didn't have that interest in it. And I didn't really have the aptitude to play an instrument. But I've always been massively into music. So as we kind of go through this episode, I'm going to mention music a lot because that's pretty much where I get all of my main source of inspiration from.
Wow, you're going to be really interested in this episode and I'm going to be really boring. I mean, go on.
Well, no, because I want to hear it from you because I feel like you're going to have more to offer in terms of where you get your inspiration from for photography and for films. Whereas Matt, I don't have any really, which is ridiculous because like, you know, you just assume that you're going to be like a real art connoisseur and you're going to be really into all the kind of classic stuff, but I'm not, and I never have been. That's kind of why I'm interested to hear what you kind of say in terms of that.
Yeah. Good stuff. I interrupted you halfway through your story there.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much it in a real nutshell. Is that
you were younger? I don't think we got to who when you were younger inspired you. Or was it more the music that inspired you?
So growing up,
what inspiration did you get from it?
Well, growing up, I would say my mum inspired me in terms of I would say she had quite a struggle. You know, it wasn't an easy life, and she busted her ass basically to, you know, to keep the bills paid, food on the table, and look after me. And I know how hard that was for her. And then, you know, kind of, it wasn't until probably in my later, you know, like 8, 9, 10, at that point I started to have more contact with my dad, and my mum and my dad both remarried and kind of started having your typical lives where, you know, they started having more kids with the new partners. And so I was kind of, I saw my mum and I was inspired by her, from like a, she busted her ass. And my dad always had this really great work ethic. So the second part of that story is he went on to get a job and be quite like one of the, it was early days, but one of the like senior people at the Yorkshire Sculpture Park, which isn't far from where I live. And so I grew up in this kind of world where the arts and because the Sculpture Park wasn't as big as it is now, but it was kind of, there was access to all this, all this kind of art and this culture. Because I'd go there with my dad a lot. He was like one of the bosses there, and I ended up getting a job there, and I worked in the cafe and then worked my way up to like being a park warden. And so I basically grew up at the Sculpture Park, like my teenage years through till I was like 21. I worked most of the holidays, every weekend there, up around all this culture, all this art. And it actually kind of, it turned me off off art and creativity, if that makes sense. and kind of sent me in this direction of like, because of wanting money, because I kind of grew up not with a lot, and security, and not really feeling like if I was going to do something creative that it had to be like this artist. And I'd spent a lot of time around these archetypes that I didn't really relate to.
Have the interest in it, yeah.
Yeah, and so I thought, well, I'm not meant for something like that. So that's when I ended up joining the police. So that's basically, in a nutshell.
Yeah. What brought you back around to, because what you do now is creative, so what brought you back around to like the creative side then? Because obviously you must have had some sort of interest in it to leave like a good career to come into this.
Yeah, I mean, so when it comes to
You must have had an underlying, I mean, like with all like your family being creative, you must have had an underlying creative side and interest in it somewhere.
I think I see and I know that now, but yeah. I didn't, I think when you're growing up, and particularly in the 80s and 90s when I was growing up, things were quite pigeonholed, you know? So like, if you're an artist or you were a creative, then you had to be doing, you had to be drawing, painting, creating sculpture, or, maybe you were a musician. Nobody ever said you could be and the idea that you would be, I think back then was different as well because technology's changed, the internet's changed everything, but the idea that I was never going to be a filmmaker, a proper one.
Yeah.
So there was nothing there for me, whereas it's later on in life, you there's like doors open because you don't have to go to film school and become, an actual TV, producer or a film director to be working in this sort of field, or like, photography. I mean, you hear lots of people who are wedding photographers talk about how before they became a wedding photographer, they thought that wasn't really a thing, that wasn't proper photography. Yeah. And it's only when they kind of sort of stumbled into doing wedding photography that they realized actually it's one of the most, creative aspects, because you get to do all sorts of different types of photography.
I mean,
the idea that I would have become a photographer or a filmmaker, that seems crazy when I think back to being a teenager. But I was always really into drama, and I was always, like I say, I was always into music, but at the time it was like DJing, because I couldn't play an instrument, and that was very frowned upon in with my grandparents and things like who were all like into proper music,
classical, so, and opera singing and whatnot.
Yeah, exactly. Brilliant.
So, to be fair, we were a bit similar than we realised, actually. My upbringing wasn't far off yours, to be fair. My mum and dad divorced when I was about, I think we said this before the podcast started, my mum and dad divorced when I was around 9, I think, and my dad worked in London, but we lived up north, so I only saw my dad maybe once every other week. So, like, we went through the same process of, like, watching my mom struggling and, like, working and trying to get the food on the table and whatnot. So, yeah, I guess I can see, like, the inspiration from that side. I think for me, I was too young at that age to really understand what was going on. So my inspiration back then, and still is now, like, really, was my granddad at that point, because he was kind of like the man of the house. We always went to see them a lot, or he came over to see us. But yeah, I mean, like, you're touching upon like music and stuff. A lot of my inspiration back then as well came from movies. And like, even when I was younger, like, used to love it. Like, I think we mentioned in a podcast before that I grew up for a few years in South Africa. So like, I was hooked on like watching the David Attenborough shows and what. I don't think Planet Earth was out back then, but there was definitely like the David Attenborough shows and like all the nature shows and whatnot. So I was quite hooked on stuff like that. And that actually got me like really like passionate about wildlife photography. And like, I only played about with and dabbled with it as a kid. I didn't actually do it professionally or whatnot. But I think that's where really my inspiration for like photography came from anyway.
And how old are you at that point then? Yeah. When you I know you kind of mentioned that previously, but so how old do you think you were when you were, you know, when that became a real interest, when you weren't just thinking about, you know, oh, that's interesting watching that, but you actually started picking up a camera and having a go yourself?
I'd have probably been about 14 when I thought this is quite interesting. I mean, like, I didn't really, I always just went in and out of it. It wasn't anything that I thought this is going to be a career. I mean, my dad had like a very successful career, but it was in like more of like the building industry. So in my head, I always thought, well, that's the kind of route that I'm going to have to take to be successful.
Right.
Yeah. So it was a bit of a weird one. I always had the passion for like photo and film. Didn't do the best at college or at school or college. And then it came to the point where I was like, right, well, I'm either going to have to get a job or go to uni. And I didn't know what I wanted to do. So uni was the easy option for me. And
yeah,
TV and film production came up and I thought, well, you know what? I like cameras. Like that's kind of how it started for me. Like I went on it because I was just inspired by like David Attenborough and watching other movies like Ridley Scott, Aliens, like that. He filmed that in a factory not too far from where I grew up, near Teesside. Fact of the day,
right? I did not know that, mate. I did not know that.
There you go. Yeah, yeah. So yeah, I suppose I had the interest in it from that side of it, and then going to uni was kind of just a didn't know what to do situation, and picked that course because I had some sort of familiarity with it. And I think that's really where I started like learning that this wasn't more just a passion, like I wanted to do it as a career. But before that, it was quite difficult to get my head around that, because like for years and years and years, I thought, right, well, to be successful, like my dad, I'll get into like the construction industry or the telecommunications industry, which he was in.
Right.
So yeah, a bit of a weird one, isn't it? Having to kind of like go against what you, I mean, like as you were like in the police, like going against it and going for something that actually no one else really in my family has done like anything creative. I mean, like we have got creative people in my family, but they never pursued it as such. So yeah, it felt like a bit of a curveball for me when I actually decided to go for it and try and do it full time.
Right. It's interesting because I honestly assumed that your story would be more, your inspiration would have come earlier on and you would have been more into, you know, visual art before you even, you know, you got to university.
I wasn't that six-year-old walking around, walking on the art museums and expressing what visions I could see in each picture and whatnot. Well, that wasn't me, unfortunately. Right.
It's interesting. So, yeah. Like,
Was it? Did you think? I don't know if I pictured that at a young age. Or?
I did. Just because I must come, you know, come across, I think quite, I look
quite,
at,
quite well.
Yeah. Well, you must do. Yeah. I think I look at the, you know, your style, and I look at it and think, well, that must come from somewhere that, and I guess I just assumed it came from further back because you've been doing this longer than I have as well.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
To be honest with you, Jules,
it might come from somewhere, but it's probably somewhere that I don't know where it's come from. If you see where I'm going with that, it's just appeared out of nowhere, my style. But I mean, like there's been inspirations within like the wedding industry and that as well that I've had. So, shall we name names on here in the industry? I don't know.
Yeah, we should. But let's come on to the wedding industry in a second. Let's look at the middle bit, because I think, you know, you're at uni and you've actually gone and studied you know, a visual art course. I didn't go to uni at the time, so I joined the police. As far as I'm concerned, I didn't think about anything creative. What I've kind of since pieced together, I've always had this draw to figuring out a better way you know, being showing some initiative and innovating on something. It's just always what I've done. Whenever I've seen something, I was very frustrated in the police, because the police is a very, well, a lot of public services are, but the police in particular is very old fashioned and archaic. They don't like to make changes. They don't like to put, you know, come forward and right, there's much better and more efficient ways of doing this. Let's have a go and let's change stuff. They just, you know, this is how we do it. We've always done it like this. So I didn't fit in there very well. And I've realized since that maybe where my creative outlet has been, you know, because it wasn't for a big period of my life, it wasn't through creating anything, but it was it was about making changes to things and seeing things, problem solving, that sort of thing. Looking at things differently to how other people were looking at it. So that's kind of what I've realized. But you obviously have gone to uni, so you will have, I've since been to uni, so I know what university environment is typically like. I mean, you know, I didn't go when I was younger, so I didn't do a lot of the fun stuff. But the work side of it, I know what they're trying to do. You know, they're trying to kind of get you to think about things in a particular way and expand your mind a little bit. So how did you find uni helped with you or shaped your creativity?
Uni's an interesting one. So obviously, like as I said before, I kind of just went to uni because I didn't actually know the route I wanted to take. And TV and film was an interest to me, so I thought, well, I'll do it. And it's 3 years extra to give me a chance to have a bit of fun, learn something a bit different, and figure out what I want to do. It wasn't actually, I won't be the only one, but I don't think people always go to uni to study something that they know they're going to carry on. I think sometimes it's almost just that extra couple of years to figure out where you want to be and who you are and what you want to do. Yeah. So I was one of them people, I think. And the first year of uni, it was just a piss up, to put it bluntly. There wasn't really
no way.
There wasn't really like there wasn't really any. I didn't really have any interest in trying to like prove myself or make something out of myself until the second year, when we had to do a specialism for one of the topics. I can't remember what I picked now. Anyway, you could pick maybe three or four people to work in your team, and everyone kind of worked together in each team. So I was cameraman for the majority of them. And I kind of just, it's a bit childish, but I started getting like praise for my camera work, and like the tutors were saying, bloody hell, that's good work that. And like all the other students started wanting to book me on to film their projects and whatnot. So I kind of got a bit of a buzz from it, I guess, and kind of enjoyed people appreciating what I did. And I think that's kind of when I started becoming interested in like more of the camera work side of stuff and a bit of the storytelling side of it as well, I guess. I suppose really that is how it all started, really, for like the career in photography, is down to like them people trusting me and filming their projects for them and stuff. I mean, like a lot of people were interested in becoming like directors and all that stuff, but like for me, like I think I had my head on my shoulders a little bit and realizing that the chances of becoming a director, successful director, is pretty slim. The chances of becoming a good videographer or a cameraman and working your way around, becoming like a runner, working your way up onto TV shows, documentaries, or films, whatnot. You know what? There's no reason why you couldn't do that. But I mean, like, yeah, for a director and storytellers and stuff, I think it's a lot more challenging to get jobs in that. So I focused a lot on the camera work. And yeah, I just think it's down to the guys that trusted me in doing it that kind of got me the urge. I mean, like I won a couple of awards at uni as well, so I think they were just encouraging me more than anything else. I mean, like the first year, I remember my teacher Diane sat down with me at the end of it saying, like, you need to pull your finger out really and do something about it. And like at the end of the second year, she wrote a letter to me and she was like, you're a different person. And I think it's really because people, as I said a thousand times already, haven't I? But people kind of just showed an interest in me. So it was a bit like a dog with a bone, wasn't it, really? Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of it.
And so, like, while you're doing this, are you getting any, you know, are you getting any inspiration from anywhere? Where are you're saying you kind of go with your camera work? Where, obviously, I know you have been doing modules where they were teaching you about kind of, you know, how to operate cameras, about composition and lighting and things. But were you taking in sources that were giving you ideas and inspiration, or were you kind of self fulfilling, you know, what it was that you,
I think
your style,
mixed
if you like.
I think I was probably self fulfilling the majority of it. And just finding angles in like different ways that, like, I like the look of the framing and whatnot. I mean, like, we always taught like the rule of thirds and how to use it but go against it at the same time and whatnot. But I think maybe unknowingly I got inspiration from the films that we used to watch. So I used to live with two other lads at uni, and like, they were both massive film buffs. So like, each week they had like new DVDs and stuff. So we might have sat down once a week with some beers and watched movies like Quentin Tarantino stuff and Guy Ritchie and whatnot. And maybe some of that type of stuff inspired me as well.
This is fascinating because this is literally the sort of stuff that I would say. You know, like, I expected you, I don't know why, but I expected you to be like coming out with some of the like really, really classic, you know, cinematographers and directors and,
I'll
you know,
like,
the inspiration.
There's not many directors on that.
Me
like,
neither.
I'll be like, I need to know who this guy is. Or like, there's not any artists really that like, I'm like, I need to know who this guy is. I mean, like, when I was back at college, I was doing, I'll change the whole thing for you now. When I was back at college, I was doing graphic design, and a module of graphic design was photography. So we had to walk around and like decide the style of photo we wanted to do and whatnot, and research the photographers and like who does that type of style. So you'll have heard of Martin Parr, have you?
Yes, I have, yeah. Documentary, yeah. So that, it's like...
documentary guy.
Yeah, it's really, really, really interesting, actually. Because I'd heard you talk about him, but I'd also heard a couple of other documentary photographers talk about him.
Oh, really?
He's got like a foundation and everything, hasn't he?
He has. I mean, like, he is good. I look at his work now and like... I mean, he is an amazing photographer. I think he, to me... And it probably wasn't him, but for me, he was really the only guy I knew in the documentary world. I didn't really research or look at that many other people. So now I think I connected with him because the college I went to was a seaside town, and a lot of his photos were from the seaside. So like on our module, it was like, there's a shot from Martin Parr where he just walks up to like this car, and there's an old man fast asleep in the car, and he takes a photo with him. And like, it's a brilliant photograph. It's like documenting like this old bloke with his top off, fast asleep in his car, snoring his head off, like on the beach with ice creams and seagulls around him and stuff. And like, I saw that and I thought, well, I like this guy. I can see this, and I can go down to the beach and I can find an old bloke asleep on the on the bench or whatnot. To be fair, I won an award I won a certificate. Is it an award? What do you call them at college? I don't know. I won a certificate, award winning. And it was a good picture, actually. It's my mum's favorite picture, and I put it in black and white. It has to be black and white, and it was actually with a 35mm camera, and it was on the beach, and I saw this sign on the beach. And it said, no dogs on the beach. And it was a picture of a dog taking like a shit with a red line through it. And like in the distance on the beach, there was a real dog taking a shit. And I thought, oh, this is fucking perfect. Like, you couldn't get a better timing than that, could you? So
that is it. That's the gold dust stuff.
Yeah, it is. So, I mean, like, yeah. For me, like Martin Parr, I didn't do that much research on him. I just saw and I had a connection with like his work, and I thought, it's kind of the same area that I'm in. Like, there's not that much technical stuff to it. He's just walking around taking photographs and documenting moments that he sees and likes. And he, the only challenge for me was like getting the balls to actually go up and take a photograph of someone as they were walking past, or as you do, like as a street photographer or something, documenting. Yeah. That was kind of like, that was where I was like, I'm going to enjoy this because this is going to challenge me to like push myself and take a photograph of someone asleep in a car without getting caught or something like that. But that moment never happened. It was a dog shitting on the beach that happened for me. But yeah, it was, yeah. So yeah, I guess, yeah.
So did you ever do more street photography?
We did little bits and bobs. We didn't do loads of it. I mean, like, I always, even now, like, I think to myself, like, one day a week, I'd love to just get up in the morning, drop Luke off at school and go into the city, and maybe we should do it one day. Go into the city and do some, like, street photography or something like that. And, like, yeah, it does appeal to me. I don't do loads of it. I mean, like, when we travel and stuff, I'll always have my camera with me and be snapping away and stuff like that. But no, I don't purposely go out and do street photography. But it is something I wanna do really. I've always thought about doing it. Have you ever thought about doing it?
Yeah, I would love to. I think it's
let's make a street photography group. It is a time thing. Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I would definitely be up for it. I think I guess the thing I have with street photography, I see people doing it. I see people talking about it in groups and things. And I kind of have this thing of like, when people talk about street photography and they get really technical about it, and I think, and I'll be honest, I could really alienate some people with some of the stuff I could say. But if I'm being honest, right, the problem I have with, you know, photography in general, or a lot of artists, or artistic pursuits, is that it just becomes like over analyzed or over the top, if you like. So like, for instance, street photography, I'm sure there's a lot to it if you really, really want to go into it. But essentially, you're just sort of like watching for something to happen and taking a photo of it, aren't you? I think sometimes I don't know if I want to just take photos of people going about their lives.
Exactly what you mean. I think for me, like, if I was going to go out and do street photography, like if I'm walking around town and I'm like with Luke and Sarah, or even just by myself, and like I might see a building and like it's got some good shapes to it because the light's hitting it right, then I'll be thinking, wow, that building make a great photograph. But then like all of a sudden you'd be thinking, actually, but it'd be even better if I could get a silhouette of someone walking through that light that's created them shapes. I think that's the type of street photography that I'd be going for. I mean, like, there is other people out there that literally just walk past, like Martin Parr walked past it. He just takes photos of people, doesn't he? There's not actually any skill to it. Well, I'm not saying Martin Parr's not skillful, because that's a lie, but there's not really any skill to a lot of like the photos. I'm going to insult people here, aren't I? Not a lot of skill of just walking and taking photographs of people. It's a lot of the time, it's just having the balls to do it. Like I was in the city the other day, and there was this guy sat on a bench, and he had a massive dog with him, and it was like a big white long-haired dog, and he had a comb, and he was combing the dog, and the light was hitting them both perfectly, and I thought, fuck, I want to get a photo with that. It looks amazing. And I only had my phone with me, but I was teetering on the edge, thinking like, shall I go and ask him if it's all right for me to take the photograph? And like, I didn't bother taking it, but I should have. Like, it would have been a good photograph, that. And like, I could have, you see it all the time on blooming Instagram and whatnot, like, especially in America, like someone will take a photograph going, hey man, my American accent, I've taken a photo of you, I'll send it to you, this is awesome. And like, they were like, wow, this is great, thanks so much. Like, you know what I mean? Like, moments like that, like that guy was there brushing a dog with a comb in the middle of the bloody street.
And they probably would like appreciate actual, like, that photo.
Well, maybe, they probably would. It just was. I mean, like, the light was hitting him perfectly. The Minster was in the background. It was a really cool photograph, and I thought, shit, I should have taken that. But, I think street photography is a weird one for me. I don't think I'd be the type of guy that just walk around taking photographs of people walking past. I don't quite understand that. But when I see, like, the shapes and the different lights and all that, that's kind of what intrigues me. I mean, maybe, I think you can kind of see some of that in my wedding photography as well.
Yeah, so that's perfect, because what you're saying is that you've actually, you know, a massive part of your wedding photography or wedding films is influenced by that kind of, and we don't even need to put a label on it as street photography, but you can put it on as like, you know, photojournalistic, in the moment type stuff. Mm-hmm. You're not planning it. It's happening. It's organic.
So
for me, that is what I had no, cause you know, I think you actually did ask a bit ago, so how did you end up like going from being in the police to doing this?
Yeah.
And I didn't have any interest in it whatsoever. It was my interest in photography and video has always been about memories. So I've recently gone through like, adjusting my branding, and I've realized how my niche is, I don't need to talk about photography or video or filmmaking. I can literally just talk about memories, because that's why I kind of got into this. I was the kid who always had, and it was a lot harder back then because we didn't have camera phones, but I always had some kind of camera, whether it was a still one or a video camera. And I just used to, document everything that was going on. So whether it was like family stuff with I had younger brothers and sisters, whether it was them, my parents and stuff, or whether it was like doing stuff with my mates, going on, you know, nights out, holidays, stuff like that. And the thing is, I have this huge bank of photos on a hard drive that's just like everything from my teenage years right through kind of to get, you know, even after me and Lindsay got married, I've still got, you know, loads of trips away. And I know people do take photos and video clips of things, but I probably have an abnormal amount of them, if that makes sense. And so for me, I used to make like slideshows and stuff up for my own, you know, to like share with my mates and share on MySpace.
MySpace
stuff like that.
Yeah, now you're talking.
Yeah,
that's been a while, that one.
Yeah, you know, and it was always kind of like I was doing it for my own kind of personal enjoyment. And then sort of when I was at a bit of a juncture of like I need a new direction career wise, it was like, well, what do I enjoy doing? I enjoy editing photos and videos together, and I don't really know what I'm doing. I'm not technically gifted in that area as such. I just enjoy doing it. And what do I really enjoy doing for other people? Like, I enjoy capturing memories for me. Why don't I capture memories for other people? And there's less of a market for spending money on it in the UK for family photography and videography. I'm not saying there isn't one, there is, but it's a less of a market than there is with weddings. Weddings is one of those where you can actually charge people to give them memories. And that was like literally the only way I thought of it. When, you know, I started looking into the technical side of it after that. But when I first got the idea of I'm going to go and be a wedding videographer, that was literally where I started with
it. You can see that in your films as well, I think, because you've done well not to get carried away with, like, in getting inspired by other wedding photographers and videographers and whatnot, because you can see in your videos that, like, you're capturing the memories, where a lot of the time, and I've fallen for it as well, and I've done it, a lot of the time you're focusing on, like, the technical side of it and, like, capturing the buttons of the back of a dress looking nice in some light and casting shadows and all that crap. It's not a memory. It's just a nice photograph. Whereas, like, what's most important at the end of the day is actually 20 years' time when this couple have lost like the grandparents or the parents or whatnot, the family friends, like you've captured the memories. They're not going to be bothered in these floating dress shots and these posed pictures of themselves and whatnot. They're not going to be interested in that. So you can definitely see in your images and your videos especially that, like, as much as, like, you've got the creative side and you've got the skills there to capture it correctly, like, you are focusing a lot more on, like, the memory side of it.
Yeah, so for me, the memory side came first, and it was an instinctive thing of capturing things that were happening, and that's what I wanted to do. Yeah. So when I set out to do it, that's all I was really focusing on. Then obviously I did get a little bit carried away trying to understand what was good and what wasn't good. Yeah. The problem there is, you know, you've touched on it. The problem is it becomes what's good to other photographers and other filmmakers.
Yeah, it does.
We don't actually ever sit down in a forum of people who are going to get married or who have been married recently and say, what photos and videos do you like? You know, what did you really connect with? And I think that the whole Instagram era has muddied the waters, because now we've got a whole generation who are trying to look a certain way. So now that has become more important, but again, you know, it's important now. Will it be important in 20 years' time? I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you can kind of tell what's most important to people after you've delivered a gallery. I mean, like, the majority of us will be on, like, some sort of gallery platform. And you can see the pictures that they download, the pictures that they print. And, like, it's never... There's a couple of pictures of them, maybe a couple of pictures of details, but the majority of them are them with their friends and family, or... like Auntie Sue falling over in the grass or something like that. You know, it's never like the shots that are on Instagram. Instagram shots are just like a portfolio of let's grab your attention to look further into it type thing, isn't it really? I mean, yeah, I think a lot of the time, like I always, when I book a couple, the majority of the time, unless I feel like they completely understand where I'm coming from and my style, I'll send them a full gallery, because the majority of my Instagram photos, that's just a snippet. Like that's maybe, I don't know, 10 minutes within the day. And the majority of them, it's like the couple's portraits I usually put on Instagram. But the majority of my gallery is like friends and family and capturing moments. It's nothing to do with like the detail shots or the couple's portraits. And like the reason for that is like, that's what they want. And you can see that from, like, delivering the gallery, isn't it? You can see that, you'll be the same as well. If you look at the photos that they download, like, 90% of them are not going to be of them boring dress shots that they always ask for. They'll always want them. But then once they see it in the gallery, that's it. They're never going to be bothered by it again.
So here's a question for you. What do you think... How is that happening then? So are we as an industry, are we all taking photos that we want to put on Instagram? Are we perpetuating that the couples are going to ask for that? But then in reality, when they get their memories back, the ones that matter to them are the ones that show a real moment, not the dress hanging up. Like the dress hanging up, you know, it's always been an interesting one to me. Like I understand why people want to see the dress before they put it on, because they spent a lot of money on it. But it's such an odd shot when you think about it. Or like the flowers, without it being in someone's hand. You know, someone carrying the flowers, I get. But the flowers just kind of presented nicely. I know why we would take them for the florist, or we would take them for the couple, for them to go, you know, I spent a lot of money on them flowers, aren't they nice? But at the same time, when you think about it, it's an odd thing to do, isn't it? Like,
I don't know. You know what? I'm not sure if this is just like a bloke's view on it or whatnot.
Yeah, because
I don't know. Yeah. Maybe it is. I don't know. Maybe, I mean, like the dresses are awesome, aren't they? They look amazing, but they look better on. So I mean, like to me, for me, a wedding dress shot is a funny one, because I don't really. I might put in a couple of galleries if it's like going with like the storyline of it, a shot of the wedding dress like hung up on the wall or something like that. But rarely I put it on. I mean, I don't think there's any on my Instagram. For the reason I just don't think it, like you said before, I don't think it looks incredible. It's not, it doesn't interest me. And I suppose it shouldn't really bother if it interests me or not. It's what interests the couple. So I'll always get that photo for them, but I'll definitely make sure that my favorite kind of photographs is more when just before the bride puts the dress on, when she picks it up and she's walking into the room with the dress that she's about to put on. Taking that photograph for me is more of an interesting photograph than just the dress hung up. There's like, it's a moment, isn't it? She's like, right, I'm just about to get into my dress. Whereas a dress hung up on the wall by the window or something, it's just a dress hung up on the wall by the window. They want detail shots and stuff, and I get that. That's fine. But it's not, a lot of people get hooked up on it. I had a wedding not long ago, and she was like, I literally walked into the room and she was like asking, can I have X, Y, and Z shots of all these details and like flat layers and all that sort of stuff. And I mean, like, I don't mind doing it, but they've got to remember, like, setting all these shots up took me half an hour, and that's half an hour of time I could have been, like, they were downstairs all having a good laugh. And like, I'm like, well, this is half an hour of my time that I need to capture this now, because you're going to put your earrings on in a minute and you're going to put your lipstick on and your perfume on in 10 minutes. If I don't capture it that you've asked for, there could be issues, couldn't there? Because they've asked if I can capture this, yet they're downstairs all having a good laugh. And I'm like, what's more important, a photograph of your lipstick that you've worn on your wedding day, or you and your bridesmaids having a good time downstairs? And like, it blows my mind a little bit sometimes. But I think they're misunderstood. And I think they get carried away with like photographs on a wedding day. And it's all down to social media. I think they see these photographs on, we're going well off topic here, aren't we? But anyway,
but it's relevant on social media. Because you're inspiration to do something like, great. Cause we're having this conversation and I'm realizing how similar we are. In the what we're looking for is, we're looking for those like moments that when you were talking about them picking the dress up just before they put it on and carrying it.
Yeah.
There's such a story in that image. Yeah. Because there's like this moment of anticipation before they're about to go in and get married.
Mm-hmm.
And
exactly, yeah.
They've like, instead of it just being some dress hung up and they've spent, I don't know how many thousand pounds potentially on this dress, instead of it just being like it's a picture of a dress, there's like I've been searching for this dress and I've been thinking about this day for a long time. And then I've picked up the dress and I'm about to put it on and I'm thinking about I'm about to walk down to my new partner. And, you know, there's such a story, isn't there? Just that one image of them holding the dress.
I think that's a thing for me. Like, there's a story to that image, isn't there? Whereas a lot of detail shots, I don't really, from my point of view, and I'm not saying it's right or wrong, I don't really find there's much of a story. I know we're documenting it and like, this is a photo with a dress, but there's no like real connection with it there for me and like the storyline of the day. So like, I think it came from like the background of TV and film production, but I like to have like a start, a middle and an end. And like a start for me would be like her and the bridesmaids getting the final bits of the makeup done, like the hair and their eyes, like before like putting the dress on, which is like her walking in with the dress, and like middle ceremony, end, pissed on the dance floor. The start wouldn't be, I mean, like, yeah, and the start just wouldn't be.
Here's an object.
An object, yeah. But I mean, they want that. I do think a lot of it is, at the moment, I mean, not everyone wants it. A lot of my couples just want me to document everything. Like, some of them don't even want detail shots or group photos or anything, which is great because it's like you're just purely just documenting the day, aren't you? But I understand why they do want that. They've spent, like you say, they spent a lot of money on these things. But I think a lot of that, I think their inspiration, couples' inspiration, comes down to the social media, like Instagram, Facebook, Pinterest, and whatnot. They see what other people have done and they think that's the right thing to do. I mean, like a lot of the photographers that listen, they'll probably add it once in a while where they've had a bride send them a list of all the photographs that they want and realize that it's the photographer down the road that's taken them photos. And it's like, well, why haven't you booked them instead of me, type thing?
Yeah.
But it's, It kind of takes away from your creativity a little bit, doesn't it? I mean, I'm not the guy that's going to want to spend hours on detail shots. I'm the guy that wants to spend hours on like searching and hunting for really cool moments and spending a nice little bit of time with the couple to get some nice portraits. I enjoy doing that, even though I try and keep the portraits as natural as possible. That's what I want to do. But like, I think a lot of people just assume that because it's flooded on Instagram and social media that this is what we'll get into, like the Instagram and like the photography inspirations in a bit, I guess. But yeah, I think a lot of people are all going down the same route. So every time a couple goes into someone's Instagram page, it's the same shit. It's the same photographs and the same styles and the same poses and whatnot as everybody else that they see. So in that way, it makes it even harder for the couple to choose who they want to work with, really, doesn't it?
It does if everybody's kind of doing the same thing, because yeah. it will, you know, you will be just scrolling through, like you say, the same. Because it's not even just the fact that people are, that's what they're posting on Instagram because that's what the current thing is, but they're probably taking so many more photos and creating, you know, they could, you know, if we kind of just touch on like the film aspect, the video aspect a minute. It's like if everybody creates the same sort of video, it's the same thing, isn't it? Like they will all not look exactly the same, but they're all going to be very similar. So it's harder to sort of go, well, and I think if that's what you're consuming, then that's what you become. That's what I need. You know, unless you see something else, it's not something that you really become educated in, is it? Like, you don't...
No, it's not.
Don't start planning a wedding and take a course on how to get the photos and videos that you want. There isn't... Yeah. I mean, maybe we should make one of them. I don't know. maybe that would be a really good thing, but, you know, nobody points out that there's, like, all these different styles or options that you could have.
Yeah.
It becomes kind of like, you know, what you see, and then you go, oh, I like that. And then if you keep seeing the same thing, then that reinforces that's what you like. So let's talk about that then. Let's talk about now you're in the wedding industry, let's talk about some of the things that you like to see, the things that have given you inspiration from within the wedding industry.
Yeah. So I think let's talk like from 3 years ago to start with, or post 3 years ago, should I say, pre 3 years ago, should I say even. I was probably like a lot of people, and we all follow each other. And we follow the people that inspire us, don't we?
Yeah.
So like a lot of the photographers, I mean, like, you know, I get really inspired by Philip White. Like, his work is incredible. He's a filmmaker, photographer. And like, I think the thing with him is his storylines are insane. Like, I mean, like he even said, I bought his course years ago. And like, he even said on there, like he doesn't post his... He only posts his best work. There's work out there that the storyline doesn't come together all the time like it should and whatnot. But sometimes these things fall into place. And I think for me, after listening to the course or watching the course or learning from the course, I got really excited and thought, right, I'm going to start filming these weddings now and listening to like the couples doing their own readings to each other and making it beautiful and whatnot. But the reality is that like these moments almost happen, but 99.9% of the time, something isn't right. Maybe there's a kid in the background screaming during the readings and you can't remove it from the audio, or maybe they're too nervous and it just doesn't look right. You know what I mean? Like there's always something. It's a live event. There's always something in a wedding. And I think it made me realize, actually, it was harming my views on how I should be shooting weddings, is by trying to create something in the same sort of style as someone else. And I realized maybe after probably 4 or 5 years in the industry that I didn't want to start like getting inspired by other wedding photographers. Like I want to network with them, and I love a load of the work. And some of them still do inspire me. When I see the work, I think, wow, man, that's amazing. You've done such a good job there. But that's it. I'll leave it then. And I'll be like, that's their work. It's not my work. So like things that inspire me, like I'll follow people like portrait photographers, street photography, wildlife photography. I mean, like, it's not even anything to do with weddings, but I think it benefits my mental health. It benefits my mental health because a lot of the time you get imposter syndrome, don't you? And then you feel inferior. Absolutely. You're taking these photographs at weddings. You're like, why aren't I shooting this wedding? Like how they can shoot it or whatnot. And then I think you realize like that they're only showing, like we do as well. Like we'll only show the best on our Instagram and our socials and our portfolio and whatnot. And the best is when like the light's hitting perfectly, or there's a really cool moment that a couple are having, or one of the family friends or whatnot are having. We're not going to show like the things that aren't perfect in the day. And like there's a lot of things in weddings that it's a live event. Like sometimes they're stood in really flat light, and you're not going to interrupt in the middle of a ceremony or something to move them. You just got to cope with it. And like the couple have just got to understand that's the situation. Like there's no moving people around during a live event. You can't do it. To get the best light or the best moment for them. I think from that, like my mental health and like imposter syndrome and realizing that I couldn't capture the things I wanted to capture. Like when I booked a wedding, say like at a beautiful venue, but like in my head months before, I'm like, oh man, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And then you get there on the day and like, it's utter chaos in the morning. The bride's running late, that it's pissing it down with rain. You know what I mean? Like, mom's already pissed by 11 o'clock in the morning. It's just things don't happen the way you want them to. And I think it's just, I think reality hits, doesn't it, a little bit, that everyone's got their own thing. And I think a lot of the time, like Instagram and stuff like that isn't the reality weddings. So for me, I didn't really want to get caught up in all of it. So, I mean, like, Philip White's course even said, don't follow your mates and stuff to get inspiration. Follow people that are outside out in the world doing different things to get, getting inspiration. And I totally agreed with him, actually. Once I started doing that, my mind just became a lot clearer. And on a totally different note as well, maybe we'll go into this podcast later on, like about Instagram and stuff. Like following all your inspiration, like all these other wedding photographers, is just the most ridiculous thing, because your algorithm is going to think they're your clients. So they're going to push all of your work out to photographers and videographers. It's not going to be pushing out to like potential clients and couples and whatnot. You should be following the couples that have booked you and want to book you and potentially will book you. I think the inspiration from like wedding photographers and all that in the past will have been people like Philip White and like the likes of. But these days I really try not to get inspired by anything, because the reality of it is that the wedding I'm gonna shoot isn't gonna be the wedding they're gonna shoot. It's gonna be someone else's day, and we just don't know what's gonna happen in it.
Are there any other types of photographer or filmmaker videographers that you, in other spaces that you can sort of name in case anyone's interested? Or is it like there isn't really anyone that comes to the top of your head, and it's just a case of if you see something that catches your eye?
There's a couple of, not really anything that comes to my head, if I'm totally honest with you. There's photographers out there that, I mean, I can't even remember what he's called. I'll get on the phone now and have a look. What's the chap called that shot Harry's wedding? Not Harry's wedding, Prince William's wedding.
Oh, I don't know.
Alex Summer.
Lucky bastard.
What's he called? Rich bloke. But he does loads of... Oh, I should know this, shouldn't I? Is that him there? He does loads of like portrait work for celebrities, so like Julie Roberts. Like he just goes and does the events for him and stuff. He gets some amazing photographs, but like the way he does it, like I love his black and white, and like a lot of the portraits are very, very natural. And I'm not saying like similar to my work, but in a way it's kind of similar to my work, because when it's a portrait, like I want to see the person. I don't want just someone stood in front of me. So you can see like behind the camera, he's making them really comfortable and he's chatting away to them, and like he's got them wetting themselves laughing, and like it's a real reaction. Do you know what I mean? Like they're having such a good time that I actually quite like. I like seeing his work because it's like really classic portrait with a mix of what's the word?
Well, I think you get like to see someone's like personality come out. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, with a mix of personality in it as well, which a lot of portraits don't. It's kind of just moody, staring down the camera portrait, isn't it? Whereas, yeah, he's slightly different. I mean, I'll link it when we post this out on Instagram. I'll link his account so people can have a look to what I mean. But
yeah, I mean, I think that that's one of the pitfalls. I would say so. When I've come into the industry, I did mainly video for the first year or two, and then I sort of slowly started to add the photography in. And I always found it with video, because you can be more passive and you can kind of capture things as they're happening. It's a lot easier to take that role and that approach.
Yeah.
Whereas when you are the wedding photographer, you have to be there kind of getting involved more, having more kind of direction, and they look to you to like, what's happening next? And you have to give them a little bit more direction. Even if you're doing things documentary, if you're going to get some portraits of a wedding couple, you're going to have to, and you know, in the group shots and things like that, you're going to have a little bit about you to say, right, I need you to stand here and do this. And bear in mind, I was in the police before, and I used to have to, you know, run quite a big team of people. I just have to tell a lot of people what to do. You know, I don't have a problem telling people what to do, but the idea of trying to tell this wedding couple how to get this thing that I wanted out of them.
Yeah.
I found that probably the most challenging thing that I've found out of all of this. The technical side of it, I've never had a problem with,
because
I've been able to...
And whatnot.
Yeah, and the kind of like... Portraits and just, you know, capturing a moment and capturing things photojournalistically and documentary style is I love doing that. But obviously there is this expectation of creating portraits or, you know, at least some kind of more structured image where you know you don't have to be telling people exactly how to hold the hand and where to point their eyes, but you have to give them some kind of direction. And I just always found that really difficult, because I felt like there was this pressure on, and I'd obviously watched a lot of other photographers operating when I've been doing video, and I was like, you know, it all feels a little bit like surely you're just capturing the person as they are, like they should know. You know, they should be themselves. Like, I can't tell them how to be. And it's only when I realize that I don't have to, I can capture the person as they are. So if they are a shy type of person, that there is a way of asking them to pose, or a way of asking them to be on camera, so that they will look and feel more comfortable. You know, and I didn't hear that from anywhere. I didn't. You know, I couldn't find any information to teach me to do that. It was something that I realized after time. I was like, everybody's different. And so rather than trying to get this great image, just allow the people to be themselves. And
definitely. It's difficult when you kind of like the portraits and stuff. Go on.
Mm. No, that was it. I was kind of the end of that one, mate. Go on.
Yeah, it is the portrait side of it. I mean, like, I find it quite easy now, and I really enjoy it. But I do like the most simplest of portraits. I don't get him doing all these cringy poses and whatnot. But like, one thing that really helped me in the past was especially like you have to test the waters with your couple a little bit, don't you, when you come into the portrait side of it? Because it's just them two then, and it's a different ball game, isn't it? When there's a camera in the face, they can either be natural and chilled out as you want, or they might just be like bricks and not move and just look awkward as fuck, won't they? Like, one thing I used to do, like, I used to try and have a laugh with them, and used to be like, right, I know you said you didn't want to do any cheesy poses or whatnot, but just trust me, this one's going to look really good. And, like, I used to put them in the most awkward, cheesy pose possible. And then, like, I used to chat, and I used to pretend to take a photograph of them. And then, like, I could see the awkwardness in them. And then afterwards, I'd be like, listen, guys, I didn't even take a photograph of that. I just wanted you to get that fear out of you. About like looking cringe and stuff.
It's
like
a really good tip,
that,
mate.
I do this every week. Like you guys, just be yourselves. Like it's not going to bother me. Don't worry about me whatsoever. And like the second they realized that was the cheesiest moment of the day gone, like they instantly relaxed. I was like, we're not going to do anything like that again. We're just going to walk along and you can chat to each other. And like they're like, oh thank fuck, it's over with. We don't need to worry. Like it done. And then the rest of the time, it's like literally like. Right, guys, just walk hand in hand and just look towards each other while we're walking. I mean, like, you've worked with me before. You know how we both work. But, like, there's nothing, like, really pressureful or anything. But, I think the poses can be quite an awkward one, can't they? And, again, like, I think a lot of photographers and videographers get pressured into seeing all these other wedding photographers and videographers doing all these poses. And a whole different realm again, but... A lot of the time they don't realise, but these are styled shoots with professional models. Like they're not...
Yeah, which is a different ball game, yeah.
Different ball game altogether. Yeah, I mean, like me and you have worked with some models before. And like, oh my God, we didn't even have to direct them in how to look. And they just both looked incredible, didn't they? And it's just like Jen and Elliot. And like, there was no work to be done. We could just literally just walk around photographing and they just... walked along doing different poses, different walks and all sorts, didn't they? And it was just the easiest day ever. But then on the reality side of it, the majority of people, especially like the majority of people that book me, I can guarantee you 99.9% of them in their initial email will be, we're not comfortable around the camera. And it's like, yeah. No one is comfortable around the camera, unless you're a model.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I think a lot of people, you can start seeing it now, I think, with like style shoots and all that, but I think a lot of people do see, how have you posed these people and made them look so comfortable? Like, you probably, there's maybe been a handful of occasions out of like the 300 odd weddings that I've shot that like a couple will be comfortable doing that aren't models. And then the rest of the time, like you're not really going to get away with some of them shots. You're just not. That's not what people book you for, really, is to get them type of shots. They want shots of them being, well, it depends what style you shoot, I guess, isn't it? But a lot of people documentary these days, they don't want like the editorial, a lot of people are documentary or editorial, they don't really want like too many over the top posed photographs, do they? So, yeah, I think I would definitely advise people against getting too much inspiration from other wedding photographers, because I don't think half of it is real. I think it's just styled shoots and not an actual moment.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the inspiration that comes, you know, the industry is almost feeding itself there, isn't it?
You see a photo
from another photographer, or you see a film from another filmmaker, and they're doing really good, then the you know kind of natural thing there is to try and imitate that a little bit, and then if you do well with that, then someone imitates you, and then everything, like you say, everything starts to look very similar. And you know, we're not reinventing the wheel here. There's only so many ways you can photograph or video a wedding.
But there are
different styles that you can use. There are different approaches you can use. You can use different colors. You can use different, color grades. Or so it's certainly. I mean, you've mentioned about like my work is very different. So like. This is the funny thing. I don't really, I mean, I didn't look at any other photographers or filmmakers. I'm not going to lie and say I've never looked at how other people took a photo or at a venue or anything, because like sometimes, you know, if I've not been to a venue before, I might have a little scan at what's out there and get some ideas if I'm thinking. But, and I've looked at other photographers' work and gone, I quite like that. Now, how can I, you know, incorporate stuff like that into my work? I've looked at, you know, other filmmakers and thought, I really, like you mentioned Philip White, I love Philip White's work. I don't make my films like that, but I do, you know, I've got such an appreciation for some of the stuff that's out there. And sometimes I become a little bit like sad that I don't make my films like that, because I think, mm-hmm. that's really beautiful. That's really nice people work. I'd love to have a go at doing that. But then I know that the way I shoot is not, it wouldn't complement, it wouldn't look right doing it like that. So most of my inspiration comes from like music. So listening to music, mm-hmm. And music videos. So like, it's funny because I didn't realize this until recently, but when I was getting into doing wedding videography, and I've bought my cameras and my lenses, and I'm looking up on YouTube, and there was an educational resource, a channel by this guy called Craig Adams, and he had this thing called Wedding Film School, American, of course, because there wasn't any much education in the UK at the point. And I basically was watching him, and he doesn't have anything to do with weddings and hasn't done for years now. But at the time, he was a young lad who was doing weddings in New York, and it was interesting because he was sort of like giving, it was one of the first ones, tutorials, and there was him, and then afterwards there was Matt Johnson. Have you heard of Matt Johnson in America?
Yeah, I have heard him, yeah.
He does tutorials. He's still doing tutorials and stuff now and doing wedding education. But like these two people, it was kind of where you could learn some of this stuff from, and that's what I was doing. But then I got really into, have you heard of Casey Neistat?
I haven't, no.
So basically, Casey Neistat's like, he was like the 2015, 2016, became really big. It was one of the first like daily vloggers. And he's like a filmmaker, but he's now more known as like a YouTuber. But he did do other film projects before he kind of got big on YouTube. And but he did like these daily vlogs. Anyway, I got really into watching that. And, you know, people might, I imagine if people are listening to me saying that I was inspired, my wedding work's inspired by Casey Neistat, they'll think I'm crackers. But I watched his daily vlogs and I loved the way that he kind of used different cameras to tell the story, and the way that he positioned and the angles he used. And, you know, it was all off the cuff, so it's not really scripted. He's making it up as he goes along, but he's essentially just filming his life. But he's doing it in a way where the narrative was always there through the video. You know, there was a point to it, and he might not have scripted it to start with, but by the end of it, it made a lot of sense. And it had that beginning, middle, end structure.
Yeah.
You know, by the time he edited it all together. And I was just fascinated by this because I was like, how does this guy make this video every day? And it's really, I mean, I now am rewatching them because my daughter, who's 13, is obsessed with YouTube and stuff, which is another topic altogether, but she loves watching Casey's videos because it's literally like a masterclass in how to make internet YouTube videos. And
she'll be your next associate shooter soon.
She probably will, mate. Yeah. But yeah, basically I kind of really absorbed a lot of the stuff from Casey Neistat and how he used the camera, how he positioned the camera, and that, you know, so I wasn't watching Christopher Nolan or Ridley Scott or, you know, Quentin Tarantino, although I can kind of relate to watching Pulp Fiction and you know, thinking that was some really interesting direction and camera work. But that's kind of where I got it from. And then music videos. So like music videos tend to shoot, you know, different focal lengths. They tend to use a lot of wide shots. They tend to use a lot of dodgy angles that you wouldn't use necessarily in like a, you know, a piece of editorial work or a something that was more cinematic, because it, you know, there's a particular set of rules when it comes to cinema. Whereas like I kind of just thought, oh, well, I like using a low angle with a really wide lens. It looks different, you know, so I'll throw that in every now and then. And that's kind of where, that's why my videos look like they do. And then as I started to, you know, learn more about lighting and learn more about composition, I was like, oh, freaking hell, I love the leading lines. I love the symmetry. And then I started like throwing, you know, different compositional elements into my work that kind of ended up making the really odd choice of a really wide, low angle actually make a bit of sense, because it had some symmetry or had some leading lines in it. And that's basically, in a nutshell, where I got my inspiration from.
So going back a little bit to like getting inspired by music and stuff, when you're shooting a wedding, do you have a piece of music in mind or already for that wedding, or do you like get halfway through the day and then start understanding like the couple's personality and how they act? And then do you get like an idea of the type of music that you're going to use for the video, or do you wait until after the wedding, once you've seen all the footage and whatnot, and then think, I'm going to put this music to it because this is going to go well?
So a mixture. Not every time I have already got a song in mind. I've certainly usually got a genre or a style of music in mind. Sometimes I will have already picked a song out, or I will have a song in my mind that I've got off MusicBed or whatever. And I, you know, will occasionally have picked it and literally be putting it together in my mind as I'm going along. So the way I'm shooting, I can almost see where that is going to go. Obviously, that isn't every wedding. You know, if you do 20, 30 weddings a year, it's only going to be, you know, it's only less than half of them where you can actually be that planned. But I do the questionnaire with the couple, which helps me understand what kind of music they like and what kind of style of
do you film, ask them visuals, what sort of music they like.
Yeah, and I make it clear that I'm not going to be able to pick their music necessarily, but I will ask them for the genres that they like and the songs that they like, because it gives me a really good idea of what I might pick. And I'll be honest, when I first started out, I did use there was a site. I found this site called Song Freedom where you could use some popular music. It didn't have everything, but it had some popular music, and you could buy the license for it, and you could use it in your wedding videos. It changed a year or two later, so that you could only do that in America. You couldn't, so it ballsed it up. Yeah. But by that point, I'd already decided I didn't want to use that anymore, and I wanted to use MusicBed and stuff. But we should probably do an episode about music, but controversially, I actually like the idea of using music that couples like. So if a song really means something to a couple and it's a popular song, people get really upset, you know, and they say, well, I'm not using fucking Ed Sheeran in my thing. And I'm like, well, if the couple like it, who am I making this for? And yes, there's an element of it that's my work, and I have to be happy that this, you know, it represents me too, and it makes sense. But, you know, I can understand why a piece of music means something to somebody. And if it means something to them, then they're going to connect with that piece of work even more. So, yes, it might not make it as credible, it might not make it as timeless, but it's, you know, there's something to be said. You know, they're not necessarily going to pick Beyonce. They might pick a really nice piece of music that but obviously, you know, from a copyright perspective and all that, we can't use the music, so that kind of throws that out. I'll tell you a quick story. So the the wedding that probably changed the course of my business the most, as in like brought me the most work and definitely started to make me get clients that were looking for something different, was a couple called Sarah and Chris. And basically this was second full year, I think it was. And they were, you know, quite a unique couple in that they were, she was a doctor and he was a graphic designer, but they were really like quite an edgy couple. They really were quite clear that they didn't want something really soppy, but they also were really quite emotional people and, you know, quite expressive and everything. So I kind of got to know them, and I just took this risk. And for some reason, there was this song by Kendrick Lamar, and again, it was, I could get it off this music licensing site. So I did it. I wasn't breaking any rules. I could actually pay the license to use this Kendrick Lamar song. And once I'd heard this song, I just got it in my head. I could not use it. It was like that whole wedding, I had this song going around in my head. Yeah. And like they're probably the happiest clients I've ever had. Like I've got this like testimonial video that I have on my website and stuff. And
no, he, yeah, I've
you know
seen
what
him.
I mean? That's the kind of base to like my most successful like Instagram ad. It's this testimonial. It's a film that so many people have booked me for because they've seen that film, and then they've said, "Oh, we've seen this film, and that's why we're booking you." And like, you know, I can look back on it now and go, yeah, I could do a much better job now because I'm better at making wedding videos. But it was the fact that I had that, I really did structure a lot of things I did that day around that song. Like I kind of had it almost playing in my mind as I was doing stuff.
Yeah, that's interesting because like when I do wedding videos, especially when I was solely a videographer, I did always try to go in with a plan of like how I was going to open up the film and like the type of music I was going to shoot and stuff like that. And I did find it a lot easier actually. And I've reverted to shooting the day and just capturing the moments and then figuring it out after the wedding. Because sometimes, as we said before, like it doesn't, If you're planning your head how the day's gonna go and how you're gonna shoot, it doesn't always happen that way, does it? But I think, I think sometimes it is worth just having that little bit of a plan in your head, even if it doesn't work out that way. You can still work around it. I think it's easier in the end, and I think the results of your film, for me anyway, I think looking back at some of the films I filmed in the past are probably better than some of the ones I filmed recently, because I'm kind of just trying to create a story off the back of how the couple were and like how the wedding went. Whereas I think sometimes you've almost got to make that story, haven't you? Especially when it's a very relaxed day and there's not much happening. You've almost got to create something happening, don't you?
Hmm. And
films,
also,
I mean, like photo, you can almost get away with it, but in film, especially when you're offering I don't know how long your films are. I offer a 6 to 8 minute highlights film. But I mean, and that's not even that long, but I struggle sometimes on days where it's kind of just your getting ready, ceremony, sit down, speeches, a little dance on the dance floor. If there's nothing in between, it can end up being quite difficult to fill out 6 to 8 minute highlights film. So to plan ahead of time, get a bit of music in your head that you think might actually work, probably benefit you a bit, really.
It's even possible to, and again, I you can't do it with every couple and you can't do it with every situation, but it's even possible to pick out some music. And my wedding season will properly start in a week's time. So it's pretty busy through the summer. So my next week is actually the jobs that I've kind of given myself for the next week is to start doing all the background work for each wedding so that I've got a short list of music. I've got, you know, because I've sent all the questionnaires back, so I'm hoping that I start to get some answers back in the next few days, and I can start making a little playlist for each person, because that's what typically I'll do. I'll make a playlist for each person, and I will start to look through the answers on the questionnaire and think, oh, well, I think this couple will actually say some nice stuff during their speeches or vows, you know, and, or I don't know if this couple will, so I might need to lean heavily towards the music. It helps me then to choose not only the sort of music that will fit the style of the wedding and the couple, but it also helps me to pick the music. If I need to rely on a piece of music to carry the film, then I can, I can kind of decide which piece of music, because I might have 5-10 pieces of music that I'll probably use, within that genre at some point over the wedding, over the wedding season. But one will be, that's a banger, and one will be, it's all right. You know, and I might use the all right one when I know that the spoken word is going to be more important. But if I know that I'm going to have to lean heavier on the music, I'll use the kind of banger track. Again, I use some vocal tracks, which isn't typically what everybody else is doing, because sometimes I use that to help tell the story. You know, if they don't say an awful lot that's usable. That's kind of, it's not just the, but like you could use the music as well to even play with them during the portrait session and stuff. So if you've got a piece of music in mind, like,
I was at a wedding last year, and it's the first time that I've seen anyone do it. And I thought, actually, you know what? It's kind of a good idea. The photographer, I was doing video. The photographer had a little speaker on her bag, and she was like, what's your favorite music? So they just picked out this music and she was playing it. And as we were walking through the fields with the sunset, this music was playing in the background, and like the couple were like dancing around and like having a great time. I thought, man, this is actually a great idea. Like the couple were like really energetic and out there anyway. There was no camera shyness with them. They didn't really care. But even for couples that are a little bit shy, I thought it was a really nice idea. It was something that meant something to him. It kind of put him a little bit more at ease, made the body sway a little bit more and not be so stiff. It was good. I thought it was a really good idea. So yeah, if there's anyone listening out there that struggles with portrait shoots, maybe do something like that. I thought it was a really nice idea. Yeah.
Have you done that before? I don't do it all the time, but like I have done it before. The music, you see, the thing is, music is the reason it's kind of a big inspiration for me is because I find it to be, I get more emotional listening to music than I do watching anything on telly, a film, whatever. Yeah. So, and if you put an image with a piece of music, it is like the most powerful thing, you know, whether it's a photograph or whether it's a moving image, it's such a powerful thing. So if you're thinking, well, I'm putting, you know, I'm taking these couple's photographs, their portraits, and they're going to listen to this piece of music while they're having it done. I mean, think about it. If that's one of their favorite pieces of music, or that piece of music means something to them, when they look back at that portrait, what are they going to be? They're going to have that song in their head when they're looking at the photo. Or if you're putting a film together and you choose the right music to go with the visuals that you are putting together. And there's obviously loads of other things that come into that, you know, those creative decisions. But essentially, you are going to have so much more impact straight away if that piece of music is doing its job.
Yeah. Funnily, you've literally just given me a flash memory there from uni. I remember one day we were sat in the lecture room, and on the screen it was a black and white movie, and the tutor played it on mute, and then we'd watched it, and like he was like, "How did you feel about it?" And it was like, "It was a bit boring. It was all right. It was a bit boring." And then there was no words to it. It was just, I can't remember exactly, like there was a bit of running in it, a bit of action in it, but it was like an old movie. And so yeah, he played it in mute. It was a bit boring. So then he played it, and it had like some, I don't know, some like classical music on it. How did you feel about that? And they were like, yeah, it was all right. It was interesting. It was funny. Like he played all these different genres of music over the top of the movie. And he's like, and now this is the original music that went with it. And like, it made that piece. And like, there was no other, I mean, we must've gone through like 10 different pieces of music, and nothing really worked that well with it until like the original. And like, I can't remember, I can't, I mean, like, I'm talking like over 15 years ago now that we saw it, but there was some like facts about the movie and like the music involved in the movie, and it took them like a year just to decide the right music for this, for each scene in the film, and like that's how important like it was to them. And it just, I mean, like, yeah, I think it is really important to pick that music and spend some time finding it and whatnot, isn't it?
Because,
but anyway, this is a different podcast, isn't it? But
it is, but it's kind of, it does tie in with the inspiration and the music theory behind, you know, like how a different type of music is going to make the, you know, you feel about what you're watching. And then we could also talk about sound design as well, to do with, you know, the noises that you hear within a film and things like that. So all of this, that is actually where I focus a lot of, especially kind of from the music video side, I love using kind of subtle transitions as well. And that's why this, you know, so going on, this is why my work is the way it is.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, going on sound design quick, do you use sound designs, do you?
Yeah, so I'll probably, if I'm being honest, I probably 1 in 10 films will be something that I know is like, you know, going to be a portfolio piece. So
yeah,
I'm not going to spend the same amount, and I do a good job on everyone's weddings, but when there's a job that like the film is like, this is absolutely epic, then I will potentially spend a lot more time on things like sound design for that. Now, where I go with that, I've tried different things over the years. Again, this is more, you know, developing a style, developing a thing of like what works, what doesn't, what's worth spending your time on, what isn't. You know, I've actually spent, I've done a whole kind of sound design thing for a film before. Would the couple have appreciated it? Would they have, you know, I don't think so. But for me, it was more of a... an experiment, you know, so I kind of
doing it for yourself.
And again, if people are just watching on the phones, they're probably not going to hear, you know, the sound design in the same way as what you would intend them to if they were sat down, you know, on a surround sound speaker system with a big TV. So you can argue it's not worth it, but I'm sure you've kind of added a bit of noise into some films and stuff, because it does make a difference, especially if you've not got a really loud piece of music. You know, if you're starting off with something and you're just wanting to put those subtle sounds in to set the kind of scene before it starts to progress. You know, whether it's like atmospheric noise, you know, or even things like church bells, you know, these things can make, it's crazy how much of a difference these little things can make by adding them or taking them out. So,
Oh, good. That's interesting. Yeah.
Cool.
Wrapping it up, right, but is there anything else?
Who inspires me now?
Who inspires, it doesn't have to be work-related, just it can be anything.
Work and life.
Who inspires you?
The cliche thing is, I get inspired by family, by kid, you know, the kids, you know, because I kind of think, well, why am I doing? You know, for me, again, this kind of goes back to the branding exercise I've been doing the last couple of months. But it's more a case of like, what is really important to me? You know, I think I knew what was important to me before, but it's really returning back to. I really do enjoy creating memories for people that are gonna mean a lot more to them in the future than they do right now. So if they like it straight after the wedding, then I can be really, you know, happy that in 20, 30 years' time it's gonna mean even more to them. So I draw upon a lot of my own personal experience with my kids and, you know, being married myself and all the rest of it. What about you?
Yeah, same route, really. I mean, like, there's been things over the last couple of years, like personal stuff, you know some of the stuff, but, I mean, like, my wife Sarah's been a massive inspiration, like some of the stuff she's got to battle through, and, like, she's a warrior. So that's very inspiring. I think Yeah, it's a tough one. Like inspiration right now. I don't know. It's just family and friends, I think. Mm. I think it changes a bit once you get a bit older, doesn't it, really? I don't think it's like famous people and like the best in the industry type thing they inspire. I think it's the people around you, the closest. And yeah, the people that inspire me are the people that absolutely nail a work-life balance. I think that's a key thing for me now. Like a work-life balance is like a big thing, whereas 4, 5, 6, 7 years ago, it'd have been like someone inspired me would be someone that's making millions of pounds or dollars or whatnot and like doing really well in the business. But I think these days, oh man, I sound like an old man, don't I? I'm only 37. But like, well, that is an old man, I guess. But yeah, I think these days, like, I think I've had to take like a reroute on like the way I think. Otherwise, I think mentally I'd lose it. I don't think I could cope with trying to achieve the impossible. Like I give myself some very high like expectations. Yeah, and I think over the last year or two, I've kind of learned, oh, we do, yeah. I think over the last couple of years, I've kind of come to the reality that like a work-life balance is a lot more important than making the big bucks. I mean, like, yeah, post-pandemic, like I don't think I've ever earned as much money. I was working constantly, but I didn't enjoy it. And I mean, like you'll know, like I fell out of love with the industry. Didn't enjoy it. So
yeah, me too.
And I don't think it was actually the industry I fell out of love with. I think it was just my attitude towards work and like having to make money. I don't think it was actually the industry at all, really. But yeah, I think that inspires me. People that take the time out and spend it with the family, I think, and spend time with the family over the money and whatnot. But it's a difficult one. It's especially when you're self-employed. It's a difficult one to turn money down when people are offering you, because you don't know when the next paycheck's coming in, do you? So I mean, like,
no,
I'll
don't.
Name a name. I mean, like, we've not really chatted with each other before. Like, we've dropped a few Instagram messages and that over the past about generic stuff, but. Sam Docker, the photographer, like a lot of people know Sam Docker listening to this. I don't know if he does it now, I'm pretty sure he does, but I saw last year, I think it was, that he announced that he closes his diary in August because he just wants to spend the time with his family and go on holidays in August. And it's like, that's inspiring because especially as a wedding photographer and videographer, August is probably one of your busiest months. So like he's dedicated one of his busiest, most potential high-earning months to spend it with his family. And I think that's pretty inspiring. I think that's good. So it is. Stuff like that.
I'd love to do that.
I like stuff like that. Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, obviously he's in a position where he can. Some people aren't in that position, but I mean, he has chosen to not have that month at work, hasn't he, and spend it like with family and friends and whatnot. I mean, I don't know if that's still the case now. I just saw it last year that's what he was doing, but... that's just an example. Stuff like that, I think, is quite inspirational. It doesn't even have to be anyone in the industry. Just seeing people take a bit of action and take control over, like, the work-life balance is good.
Yeah, and that and I think I'm very inspired by, you know, doing something that makes sense and it doesn't, and it's not necessarily popular. So, you know,
I get that.
And I find I've always kind of gravitated towards that, but I have found, you know, being in this industry that's more difficult than I thought. You know, it's very easy to get sucked into, doing what you think you should be doing, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, it's 100%. Yeah. I think we've all been there. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. Good. Right. Well, we'll wrap it up there. Because I've talked about music a lot in this episode, we'll go for the song of the week again.
I talked about a dog having a shit, so.
That was a classic, mate. Honestly, I think that might be the the current pinnacle of the podcast so far. High.
Shall we put that as the cover of the podcast? Is just the dog having a shit in the background?
If you can find that photo, I would really appreciate it. In fact, you should post that on your Instagram. You know what?
Like, yeah, I'd love to. I think I remember I printed it out. I mean, it was printed out. It was 35mm. I remember developing it. I remember giving my mum the copy. You know what? She might have it. She might have it. I'll have a look. She's got a big box full of photos. I'll siphon through it all and see
come
if
on,
I can find
come on,
it.
Come on, mum. Find it.
Yeah, come on, mum. Get on with it.
Yeah. Right, so this week's song is No Time to Lose by Vows. It's a bit ethereal and cinematic, quite an uplifting song. It could be a bit too intense for some people, but I like it because it's got a nice big build-up and crescendo. This is the instrumental version, but I might mix in the vocal halfway through.
Your mum's an opera singer. Surely you've got a bit of a voice on you. Why don't you sing a bit for us now?
Don't want to hear me singing, mate, I promise you. Right, good one again this week, mate. It's been longer than I thought, but it's all good stuff.
Always is. Oh, bloody hell, nearly 2 hours. Jesus, man. We can talk.
I know. Right, take it easy. See you later, everybody.
Over and out.